This is episode 383 of Tech Talk Radio, Australia's premier tech talk show, which aired on Monday, May the 7th, 2012.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
This is an exciting day in the history of the NBN.
Copyright.gov is down. FBI.gov is next to go.
The world is in trouble. There is no Wikipedia.
Who here has an iPhone? Who here has a BlackBerry? Who here uses Gmail? Well, you're all screwed.
So we'll be monitoring this very closely. No one will pay for these rights if they can't find a way to make money off them.
Copyright is such a big issue. Legislation as 2006 is already outdated by the new technologies.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. On the show today, it seems time to revisit an old favourite of ours, backups. With all the new cloud-based offerings now online, it seemed timely to take a look at what's what and point you all in the right direction of what's right for you. There's also plenty of telco and smartphone news this week, with news from Optus and Vodafone. And RIM, yes, the Empire didn't strike back last week. As well, this week, the rollout of the National Broadband Network is now well underway, and you'd think that some ISPs would be sitting on the fence when it came to rolling out DSLAMs, the technology that goes in your telephone exchange to connect subscribers to ADSL. Well, there's one Aussie ISP that's doing just that, and we'll tell you who. Don't forget, there's the usual OddSpot, gadget, app and website of the week as well. First up, though, as per normal, here's Dr. Ron with this week's news roundup from the Tech Talk Radio News Desk.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Optus announces 750 redundancies in the next few months. Microsoft's $300 million e-book investment. Samsung unveils the Galaxy S3 smartphone. And the ATSB releases its findings into a smoking iPhone incident. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Optus last week said a major restructure of its business designed to boost profitability will result in up to 750 redundancies, representing some 8% of its workforce. Optus said the job cuts will come from senior and middle management, as well as operations, back office and support functions. The CEO of Optus's Australian Consumer Division, Mr. Kevin Russell, said the cuts were necessary because Optus needed to have a sustainable cost structure to remain competitive and continue to deliver value to its customers. Secretary of the Communication Workers Union, Mr. Len Cooper, said he was outraged by the decision, which he described as short-sighted.
It's the standard form of announcement whenever the telecommunications companies, including Optus, make announcement about redundancies. They try to demonstrate there's going to be no effect on the customers and customer service. But our experience is it's really more rhetoric than anything, and it's not just back of house and middle-level managers. Often it includes the frontline staff as well. They certainly get their share of the pay in our experience.
Market analysts say that Optus's costs are slowly rising and that the company's revenue from the December quarter was up just 1.5%. Optus's parent company, Singtel Telecommunications, closed on the Australian Securities Exchange at $2.46 last week. In a move which has seen Microsoft drop a patent lawsuit against Google's Android operating system, the software giant has teamed up with internet bookstore Barnes & Noble, throwing its support behind the Nook e-reader. Analysts say the move is clearly designed to upset the Apple-Amazon duopoly, and Microsoft clearly wants its pound of flesh from the ever-expanding tablet and e-book reader market. The investment gives Microsoft a legitimate stake in the e-book market ahead of the launch of its touch-enabled Windows 8 operating system later this year. And Microsoft will also have the chance to create and sell digital content in partnership with Barnes & Noble. The deal also gives Barnes & Noble a much-needed injection of cash. The deal, worth $605 million over 5 years, saw Barnes & Noble shares soar by as much as 90% in early trading last week before settling with a 52% gain. In other Microsoft news, the software giant last week announced it had signed a deal with Dolby Labs in an agreement for the use of its products in the Windows 8 operating system. Long synonymous with cinema and surround sound and professional audio products and services, Dolby's Digital Plus 5.1 channel decoding and 2-channel encoding will be available in Windows 8 to deliver audio to DVDs, Blu-ray discs and video games. Original equipment manufacturers, or OEMs, will pay a base royalty rate to Dolby for using its products. Dolby's shares jumped 19% to $44.60 in aftermarket trade on Thursday last week. Samsung has unveiled what it calls its Apple Slayer, the Galaxy S3 smartphone, in London. In the same way that Apple touted its iPhone 4S as an intelligent assistant, the Galaxy S3 responds to voice commands and knows when you're watching it through its camera so the display won't go to sleep if the device is still being used. The Galaxy S3 also knows when it's not in use and vibrates or beeps to alert users of missed calls or messages when it gets picked up. Samsung says the Galaxy S3 is a powerful phone with a 1.4 GHz quad-core processor, an 8-megapixel rear-facing camera, and a front-facing 1.9-megapixel camera for video calling and watching. The S3 will run the Android 4.0 Ice Cream Sandwich operating system, operate initially on 3G networks, with future models to support 4G LTE networks, and the device even features an integrated near-field communication chip. ZDNet reports the Galaxy S3 will go on sale in Europe on the 29th of May. And the Australian Transport Safety Bureau has released its findings into an investigation involving an Apple iPhone on board a regional flight from Lismore to Sydney in November last year. During the taxi to the gate after arrival, a cabin crew member noticed smoke originating from near a passenger seat. A crew member discharged a fire extinguisher onto what was later identified as an Apple iPhone. The ATSB conducted a thorough investigation and undertook a detailed analysis of the phone. It was determined a small metal screw had been misplaced in the battery bay, which punctured the battery casing and caused an internal short circuit, which led to heating and thermal runaway. In its report, the ATSB said it was probable that the screw had been misplaced during an earlier repair carried out on the phone and that the repair had not been conducted by an authorised service provider. The ATSB said the investigation highlights the risks associated with the use of non-authorised agents for the repair of lithium battery-powered devices and reinforces the Civil Aviation Safety Authority's recommendations that mobile phones should only be carried in the cabin and not in checked-in baggage. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Telstra and Optus are preparing for a 4G battle in Newcastle.
Situation normal.
Yeah, it's pretty much normal.
By all accounts.
Just watch out for Sony.
Yeah, Sony aren't doing that great either.
No.
TV now is just another form of time and place shifting permitted under Australian copyright law.
But the technology could still change in the future, and then your rules will be out of date again.
But let me throw this into the mix too. Do you think that they are capable of doing what you've just said?
Well, that's a different question, and we...
Throw that out. Buy new television. We'll have this problem.
Wrong. Okay, I'll tell you why you're wrong with your last statement.
That was straight into it.
I'm trying to think of a nice word which doesn't get me into trouble on the radio
and began playing the suspect's Nintendo Wii in his lounge room.
You're both never going to agree on this because Andrew's a content provider and Graham is a consumer.
Entertaining, informative and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. It must be that time of the night again. Here we are to do it once again for you. Or that time of the day, or that time of the morning, wherever you might happen to be listening to us. How are you, Dr. Ron?
I'm well, thanks. It is that time of day, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Time for your tech fix.
Comes around very quickly, doesn't it? Just as soon as you get out of here, you're back here again.
I know. It feels like it's the end of the week for us, but we're recording this when it's the start of the week, and it's, yeah, it's been a busy day.
Yeah, well, our week starts on the weekend.
Well, it does. It does from a tech in the Tech Talk world, in the Tech Talk universe.
Anyway.
We have to start getting ready, don't we? Recording stuff and making stuff.
It's all right, Graham. Hello.
Hello, Andrew.
There's someone missing. Have you noticed?
Yeah, I have.
Look, there's no elbow room in the studio this evening.
There's no buffer between me and Dr. Ron.
Where is she? Does anyone know?
No.
She might front yet. You never know. Like in a big city. Well, an interesting week. A couple of interesting things went across on the grapevine. The surprise one for me, I think, was Optus and Vodafone getting together, really. We'll talk about that later.
Snuggling up, getting cosy.
If you can't beat them, join them. I reckon the attitude is towards Telstra, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, they're going to combine their efforts and combine their resources when it comes to 4G LTE.
Yeah, and there's the world is a talk of Dropboxy things on cloud backups and stuff like that. So we thought, well,
why not have a bit of a chat? We'll tell you what we all use later on the show, which I think would be a bit of fun. Because it is. It's very relevant, isn't it, backing stuff up? Especially if you shoot photos at a rapid rate. And yeah.
It is. It's interesting. You made an interesting point off air during the week. You said to me that that's a sharing environment, but sharing is not backups, and backups isn't sharing.
That's very true, yes.
Mm. It is indeed. So we'll talk a little bit about that later on in the show. What else has happened? Oh, I liked your news story, Dr. Ron, about the iPhone that caught fire in a Rex plane, I think it was.
It was. It was a regional express plane. Yeah. And it's we can't blame the iPhone. It certainly wasn't an iPhone.
Yeah, shoddy workmanship.
A systemic.
We can blame that iPhone, but we can't blame iPhone in general. We can't blame Apple.
We'll get letters.
Yeah. No, it was a faulty repair.
It was.
Faulty repair. The screw was left in the battery compartment. And actually, if you have a look at the ATSB website, which is the Australian Transport Safety Bureau, ATSB, sorry. Yeah. They've actually got in the report photographs and x-rays of the faulty device, and you can see a screw in a highly unlikely place inside
the
phone.
And it shorted out the battery, I think you said.
Yeah, the screw got driven into the battery itself. Yeah. So, yeah, provided a unusual current path, let's put it that way.
Now, imagine if that had been in stored baggage underneath the aircraft in amongst a whole heap of...
Well, it very likely would have set fire to things around it.
Yeah, exactly.
Would have had that potential anyway.
If that person had, flammable clothing in their bag. Whoa.
Yep. And, fortunately it wasn't. It was in the cabin where, A, the smoke was noticed and seen, and, B, the cabin crew could discharge the fire extinguisher, I think was the phrase. Yeah.
Where did you work in a past life, Dr. Ron?
No, that was...
he's quoting directly from the report. I'd look at that report too, yeah.
Quoting the ATSB report. Yeah. Oh, thanks for the Graham as well for bringing that to my attention. That was a good find because it didn't appear in any mainstream media that I noticed.
Oh, we talked about
it. A little bit.
Did it? Yeah, we talked about it, I think, when it happened. It was a while back.
Yeah, it was.
Back in November.
Yeah.
But we didn't know the reason then.
No.
No, we were speculating
iPhone
about
had a screw loose.
At the time, we were speculating about the batch of Sony-manufactured batteries that were used by a number of other manufacturers in devices and whether it might have been related to that. But no, it was nothing to do with... There wasn't a manufacturer fault or anything. It was entirely... It had been... Well, to put it bluntly, it had been worked on by a moron, hadn't it?
And Graham, you've had a little bit of personal experience with this with Australia Post. Is it true that you can't send lithium ion batteries via the post?
Not quite. If you declare it and you put stickers all over it saying must not travel by air,
right,
they'll carry it by road.
And is it for this sort of reason?
Exactly for this sort of reason, yeah, because there's so much energy in such a small container, so the batteries are small and have a lot of power stored in them, much more so than previous battery technologies. When they do go wrong, they can go into this thermal runaway where the heat causes it to get hotter and it just keeps getting hotter and hotter until
thermal
bad stuff
runaway.
Happens.
Now, there's a term I haven't heard for a long time. We used to have it in power amps, radio frequency power amps, where they just cook themselves.
It's interesting, like you say, it is that particular battery technology and not older battery technologies that are the concern.
That's right, yeah. So it's the lithium chemistry batteries that they're concerned about for that reason. So, if you've got an older type of battery in a
nickel
device,
metal hydride
not so,
or...
Not quite so concerned about that, but no. I had it as an issue recently where I needed to send a mobile phone to somebody overseas. And, of course, there's no way to do it.
That would have been an interesting challenge.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe you had to send the phone and let the receiver
worry about finding a battery for it. Yeah, or the other thing that some unscrupulous people might do is to say that the battery... Oh, no, that's an older phone. It's probably a NiCad battery in it. Don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it. But you need to worry about it for this
reason. You do need to worry about it, yes.
I reckon there's a reason why they pack phones like that in those hermetically sealed plastic devices, like headphones that you buy. You know, so that if you can't get into it, then logically speaking, it can't get out. So any goops that leak or do anything like that will be stained within those plastic things. They hurt.
If you're sending batteries, generally it's good practice to take them out of the devices and to make sure that they're wrapped in really, really well wrapped and in insulating material so that there can be no chance of anything causing a current path to exist.
Yeah. I buy specialist batteries from overseas. A little happy chappy Australia Postman delivers them without any worry in the world. But because
I wonder about that. When you buy replacement mobile phone batteries, they arrive by post from from whoever you're buying from over in Singapore or somewhere like that. So, yeah, I wonder how that works.
Maybe the sender is ignorant of the rules and regulations here.
That's possible, or maybe there's a way around it for, you know, there's an exception for brand new batteries or something like that that are professionally packed. Or I don't know. It'd be interesting area.
Because a lot of gadgets would come with batteries, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah. And you know.
From faraway lands.
You can jump online to your manufacturer's website or to eBay and you can buy a replacement battery for your device and have them ship it over.
That's the way I always buy my batteries on eBay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Best way to do it.
If you're listening to us live, go to the chat room.
Oh, yeah, I logged in there before.
.techtalkradio.com.au. If you're not listening live, that's cool too. Forum.techtalkradio.com.au. Gareth in our chat room says he had
Are you going into Coro?
A Kindle. No, I was reading the chat room.
Oh, okay.
He had to return a Kindle and they told him to flatten the battery before he could send it back to Amazon
via
UPS.
Flatten it literally or discharge
Drive
it?
Drive over it? Discharge it?
I think he means discharge, yes.
Yeah. I hope you mean discharge, Gareth.
That would have been interesting, sending it back. Anyway, that's a lot. All right, if we're going to get on to Coro, it's
we do.
A bit of time,
lots, so let's
time
go.
For this.
Your say on Tech Talk Radio.
Come and have your say on Tech Talk Radio. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au is the email address that will find us all. Or you can go to our website and use the state-of-the-art contact form like these people have done. L. Van Deventer via the Tech Talk... Oh!
That's a familiar name. Where do I know that name from?
Via the contact form says...
Former panel member.
Former valued panelist.
Is this where she is? She's...
She's decided to be a listener.
Yeah.
Hey, y'all. Just letting you know, I won't be able to make it in Monday night. There's a family birthday on, and we're entertaining the in-laws from overseas. Cheers, Lena.
Really?
Mystery solved.
Okay.
Mystery solved. Hi, Lena. Hello to the in-laws as well.
Yeah, they might be listening to us. We shouldn't say anything about them,
people. Yeah, happy birthday to the people whose birthday it is. Freak via the Tech Talk Radio forum says, here is a website to check if you have been infected with the DNS changer malware.
Is that thing still around?
Yeah, it is. The website that Freaks posted there is www.dnsok. So it's dns-ok.us. He says it's quite simple. If it's green, you're fine. If it's red, you're not. It doesn't really give details how to get rid of it, but it shows you if you're all good or not. Cheers, Tristan.
Thanks, Tristan.
Thanks, Tristan.
Thanks, Tristan.
Now, Freak sometimes, Freak who Tristan. Is Tristan who is Freak, logs into the chat room.
Well, they were, can't just goes, see him there tonight. Go with these... Strange names.
Yeah. Regular contributor GJMCN via email says, I couldn't even finish the show before I had to reply.
Oh, dear.
Unless I buy an album where the average price can fall to below $1.69, not $1.19, is the lowest. It is the same, if not worse, with TV shows, with the rapacious pricing arrangements and unconscionable collusive studio iTunes distributor cable broadcast practices.
What does rapacious mean?
E.g. release dates and offerings. I'm just reading what he's written here. The only plus with iTunes is they usually have first access before DVDs and Blu-rays, say The Walking Dead Season 2 or Game of Thrones. They drip feed series so you are halfway through, then release the physical media to the market. Grrrr.
This sounds something like a commercial television station would do.
Rant,
treating their viewers and
it
with
does,
contempt.
Doesn't it? Rant over. Now back to rest of the podcast and my work. Hopefully I will calm down by then. Luckily my job is physical, not cranial. Thanks, GJ. And he sent some follow-up messages too, which will also pop in the show notes there. So thanks for the contribution, GJ. That's right. iTunes at least, yeah, they've got always got it up first, but it's still not good enough. You're right. Graham, you do not have the DNS changer malware on that laptop?
No.
That's good. It's green. It's a PC.
Yes.
Yes.
Ray.
Hello, Ray.
Ray.
Up, Ray up north.
Says, hi, Triple J Ray here. No, Ray Triple J here from Cairns.
Hi, Ray.
Hi, Ray. Thought you might be interested in this link from a UK computer magazine. He's posted a link to an article in PC Advisor titled, UK ISPs Start Blocking the Pirate Bay.
Yeah, I saw that during the week.
After a ruling from the High Court earlier this week in the UK, ISPs must block Swedish file-sharing website The Pirate Bay. Virgin Media has been the first to do so after the order was issued. The order was given because the site provides links to download, as the name suggests, pirated and illegal content, such as music and films.
So is this the filter that Mr. Conroy wants, which is now running in...
Is that obviously what they're doing
in the United Kingdom? Well, it's not a filter. It's the onus has been put onto the ISPs to specifically block one website, and that is the Pirate Bay. Ray says, keep up the good work. Be sure to call in for a beer when you come up for the eclipse.
What eclipse?
I don't know. Is there an eclipse?
There's a full moon outside. Didn't you notice the strange people last night? I think it was.
Ah, not just a full moon, but a full moon at the point of closest approach to Earth.
Really?
So it's very slightly larger than other full moons.
Oh.
Only by a few percent.
Is that so? Yeah. It was very bright last night. We had a party at our house, next door actually.
Ah.
Kept everybody awake all night.
Well, the full moon has a tendency to be bright.
I know, and that's obviously the night that they come out and party, and they party hard and louder and longer.
You also notice that it's, because it's rising early in the evening, you tend to see it low on the horizon early in the evening when you're still out and about. So,
oh, yes.
It looks big when it's low on the horizon.
It is. Anyway, yes, Dr. Ron.
Last but not least.
Sorry, we wilfed.
What was I looking for?
Wilf. That's it, wilfed.
Meryl, via the Tech Talk Radio contact form, says, just love the show. Thanks, Meryl.
Hello, Meryl.
Listen nearly every week on WayFM in Tasmania. Hello to all the televisions.
Are we on WayFM in Tasmania?
Of course we are. I've been on WayFM for ages.
Fantastic.
Yeah, hello to everybody down there. I'm 69 years old.
It's very cold.
It's a beautiful part of the country.
The moons are fuller down there.
I'm 69 years old. I use a laptop and an iPhone. At least, I think it's called that. I am suggesting a weekly spot in which you can talk about some common terms which some of us find confusing. For instance, I do not understand... Like rapacious. Warlock in the chat room has hit definer.com, I think. Rapacious. Adjective. Taking by force. Plundering. Greedy. Ravenous. See synonyms at voracious.
That applies to most telcos, doesn't it? Is that the context it was used in?
Yeah. It was.
Well...
I think it was iTunes, not a telco.
Yeah.
Oh, it was iTunes. Well, that applies to them too.
Unconscionable collective studio iTunes distributor cable broadcast practices.
Sorry, back to Meryl. 69-year-old Meryl, who listens to the show and wants a...
And thinks she's got an iPhone. I'm suggesting a weekly spot in which you can talk about some common terms that we find confusing. I do not understand what an Android is, nor am I quite sure how apps work. I have about 40 on my mobile phone. It's a Samsung, less than 1 year old. And I'm a bit scared to use any but the most essential ones, such as access to Gmail and camera. For instance, who can tap into them to get my info? Which ones can cost me for their use? Do they tell me in the beginning or what? How can I best use this beaut phone that I have, given I do not have internet where I live?
Well, that's a problem.
Yes.
You need internet to make half those apps work, if not all of them. And you've got a Samsung. Good phones. Good handset.
Yeah, it's not an iPhone.
No.
The generic name for that sort of phone is a smartphone. An iPhone is a particular example of a smartphone. The iPhone is Apple's smartphone. I'm guessing, because you asked what an Android is, that your phone is an Android phone.
It's got a little green man on it with a little helmet. He looks like a cartoon character. And that's an Android.
Android is the operating system that runs the phone in the same way as on your computer, Windows is the operating system that runs you. So Windows provides you with the start button. It puts all the icons on the screen. It gives you things to double-click on, that sort of stuff. And you install applications like Word and Excel or Outlook or whatever on your Windows machine. You install applications on your Android phone, but Android is the underlying operating system. It gives you the buttons and gives you the environment that allows you to select what app you're going to run or whether you're going to run the phone or whatever else. So Android phones use Android as the operating system. iPhone use an operating system called iOS, which is only available on Apple devices. And Windows Phone Mobile is available for use on smartphones as well. So some of them use that. And there's a few others around, like BlackBerry's operating system and some older ones that were around. But that's what Android is. Android is the basic operating system, the basic software that runs your phone.
Developed by Google,
that's right.
Meryl, when you install an application, or even after you've installed an application, you can actually find out what the application's going to do in terms of what it's going to cost you and what parts of the phone the application can access. So if you go into Settings and then Applications, and there's a menu option that says Manage Applications, in the current version of Android, you can click on a list of applications in there, and you can see if you select an application down towards the bottom, it will tell you what that application is going to do. It'll say this application can access the following on your phone. It might be able to access where you are. It might be able to access your accounts. It might be able to modify or delete information that's stored on your phone. So that will give you a bit of an overview as to what each application individually can do.
In terms of the cost of applications, there's two times that that can be an issue. As you've suggested in your email, there's sometimes a cost when you install it, and there's quite often some applications are free, so sometimes there's no cost when you install it, and that happens at the time that you install the application from the market, or what's now called Google Play, the Play Store. So when you search for an application in the Play Store, it shows you whether the application is free or whether it has a charge, and when you install it, it will apply that charge. Some applications, not a great many, depends on what you're doing, can also have what are called in-app charges, where it can charge you for something once the app's already installed, and if that happens, it will ask for your permission to do that. So as long as you read the permissions as you go, and you don't click on things without reading them, then you're probably fairly safe.
Meryl goes on to say, I find your show informative and entertaining. Thanks, Meryl.
Thank you, Meryl.
When I don't understand everything. Conversely, week after week, I'm beginning to build up more of a picture of this tech nerd world just from listening. Lena, I will take Lena's correspondence on board. Meryl, pass it on. I was a Mac user and lover. I was an artist, but now own a PC because I could afford it. And now they are getting closer to Mac with artistic type things. Cheers from Meryl.
Thanks, Meryl. And you know how to contact us now because you've sent us an email. Feel free to ask questions.
And we do like to try and explain these obscure terms that we use. We try to remember to explain them as we go, but sometimes we forget or there's not time in a segment. So if you do have something that we mention or even just something that you've heard about that you want us to define and explain where you are, send us through an email to feedback@techtalkradio.com.au or through the contact form on the website, and we'd be happy to do those sorts of explanations.
That's all the correspondence, Andrew. Onwards and upwards.
Absolutely. One of the other things I like about Google Play, it also applies for the App Store on the Apple site too.
Google Play being the confusing name for what used to be the market, where you go to get your apps on an Android phone.
Don't know how they came to that one. They just wanted to confuse us all.
Well, I don't want, on my tablet in particular, I don't want to play on my tablet. My tablet's a work device. It's for work.
Yeah. Anyway, if you download an application, it remembers, it knows what you've bought. So at any particular time, if you change phone to a different phone but the same operating system, you plug your Google account in and down they all come.
Yeah, it's all linked to your Google account you've set up. Yeah.
So, Meryl, there's all sorts of good things. If you can find some internet down there, that could also open up a whole world of possibilities on your mobile device, especially with navigation and things like that, whether you're out and about looking for things or even accessing the web or getting emails and stuff like that whilst you're out and about. Anyway, thanks for the email. This is Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Dr. Ron is in. Graham's in this evening. Lena is celebrating a bar mitzvah. Or what did she say? She's got a birthday.
Bar mitzvah. It's a family birthday.
Family birthday. Yes. So that's why you won't be hearing her sweet tones in the squeaky chair this evening, because she's otherwise engaged. Anyway, upward and onward, as Dr. Ron said, we've got plenty to catch up with on the show this evening.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
Just before my notebook batteries die, because I just had that warning, please find a power source very quickly.
You need my gadget of the week.
Do I?
Yeah.
I need my laptop power supply, which is in the bag, so I might do that when we go to break in a second.
Or, you need that.
I logged on just to check a few headlines before I came into the studio this evening. And what do I see by the top three headlines? Microsoft to patch three critical flaws in May. Adobe issues emergency patch for Flash. Flawed Apple update traps password in plain text. What's going on out there?
Meryl, you're better off not getting on the internet. Just steer clear. It's all bad news.
Oh, I just thought, my goodness me, here we go with all these patches and goodness knows what else coming up. But just to summarise and briefly, Microsoft's going to release three critical patches on Patch Tuesday. The patches would fix remote code executions in Office, Windows and the .NET framework and Silverlight. Just a couple of majors, I would have thought. Part of the operating system, you can't really get away with not having any of those turned on.
So they'll get pushed down to our computers automatically?
If you do what Graham does, leave them on and overnight, 3 o'clock in the morning, chances are your machine will be working very hard.
Oh, I hate when your machine restarts at 3 o'clock in the morning when you're busy flat out working.
Oh, yes, it's a shocker, isn't it? That's happened to me on a few occasions. And what's worse is when your server does it. And then you've got nothing to do apart from go and watch the kettle for 5 minutes while it reboots or does whatever it is that it does. Okay, so that's Microsoft's news. Apple, what have they got? Passwords for Apple Mac File Vault are being stored in the clear due to balked OS X security update, which was issued back in February.
Ooh.
So they've obviously got passwords that are actually being accessible for some of their applications if you know where to look. I don't think that's too bad, but I'm not familiar with Apple. What's File Vault? Does anybody know? I don't, because I don't have one of those. I'm sure if Lena was here, she'd tell us. She knows these things. So there's that one there. You're tapping madly there, Dr. Ron.
Yeah, I am. I am. The chat room will tell us in about 30 seconds. They're not too far behind.
Not on my laptop, they won't. I must find that power supply very shortly. Also, Adobe, that thing Flash, which is also still around, except unless you have an iGadget.
Yeah, that thing's still around.
Yeah, Adobe will issue an emergency patch for a critical bug in its Flash Player software. That's being used to target malware attacks. Updating to Flash version, and there's a whole lot of numbers here on the screen, but roughly it's 11.2.202.235. Sounds like an IP address, doesn't it? How do you go with versions of your software? It comes up like an IP address. Macintosh, Windows, Linux closes, and the vulnerability. So if you do your updates, once again, without going into huge amounts of detail, the ones to do this week, gang, Flash, do your Microsoft updates on Tuesday, Patch Tuesday. And if you've got an Apple one, I'll just do your updates there as well, and hopefully we'll all be safe until this time next week. It's a full-time job keeping up with a lot of these things, isn't it, Dr. Ron?
It is. You need to just keep on top of them too. Do what Graham has always suggested. Make sure your updates are all turned on and your computer just does it automatically so you don't forget, you don't fall behind.
Yeah, now updates for things like Flash and Java may not be automatic because they don't come from your Windows updates. They're separate. So watch your notification area, which on a lot of PCs is down in the bottom right corner near where the clock is. Watch your notification area there for a little update thing saying there's an update ready to be installed, and install them, because otherwise, next time you open a PDF, you may well get more than you bargained for.
Yeah, absolutely. Good advice. All right, time to take a break so I can go and get a power supply, and we'll be back with more after this.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
What does this button do? Hello, everybody.
But I buck the trend on the hive mind that is Tech Talk Radio.
Which is patently absurd.
It is absurd, exactly right.
But anyway, my point is...
Moving along.
My point is...
And why do you have to change the phone number?
That's a good question, Dr. Ron. Why?
If they're that clueless, they should not be answering the phone.
I can't see a blue tin. I can't see a blue tin.
Entertaining, informative, and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Just in case you missed something, want to hear a discussion again, or even if you wanted to indulge in the Tech Talk Radio extended mix, then subscribe to the Tech Talk Radio podcast. You'll find a link on the website, techtalkradio.com.au, or subscribe on iTunes. You can also have a repeat of the current show streamed live to your device by visiting stitcher.com or by visiting the Tech Talk Radio small screen site, m.techtalkradio.com.au. Tech Talk Radio, it's everywhere you need it.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
I can't help but notice there's some shenanigans going on in the chat room this evening. This is our live little chat room where people can come and contribute live, talk to us and other listeners whilst the show is going to air.
When you say shenanigans, what you really
don't
mean
say
is...
shenanigans.
No, don't say shenanigans.
All right, I won't then.
There's people.
What should I say? Do I have to get my thingy out and try and work out another word?
Come and join everybody there. You can come and join. Say hello to Warlock, which is me at the moment.
Oh,
and
really? That's what I mean by shenanigans.
Warlock's Dr. Ron, and someone was the panel for a while. I was the panel for a while. Graham was the panel for a while. Is anyone GC at the moment? Or is...
Someone's gone nerd.
Oh, I thought I was GC. Yes, I'm GC.
Right.
Absolute utter confusion. Anyway... During the course of our last little chinwag, we were talking about Pirate Bay, the Swedish online people that provide links to otherwise illegal music.
We were. Ray Triple J alerted us to the fact that UK ISPs had started, or had been ordered to start blocking the Pirate Bay website.
Yeah, anyway, I'm just going to scroll back up my screen, and Darren from the UK made a comment that went across, I think most people believe it's gone off my screen now, but anyway, words to the effect that he's in the UK, obviously, and he's using, I think it was Virgin Internet, or ISP that sounds like
Virgin
it.
Media, Darren UK, just tried Pirate Bay, sorry, the webpage you have requested is not available through Virgin Media. So
nice,
there you go.
One.
So they've blocked it. Not that it's a big problem, of course. Pirate Bay has jumped the shark well and truly. So, yeah, there are...
Jumped the fridge too.
Better ways to... moving right along.
What was the fridge? The fridge one?
That was a reference to Indiana Jones and the impossible thing that was happened in the Crystal Skull, I think it was.
The phrase there was nuke the fridge.
Nuke the fridge. Oh, there you go.
That's the phrase. Well done, Graham.
Yeah, because the nuclear bomb goes off and Harrison Ford walks out of a fridge.
Yeah, it's a highly credible.
Yeah, hides in a refrigerator, yes. That's right. Yes.
Hey, while we're talking about films, exciting news. July 20, Batman hits the big IMAX screens. Big night out.
Really?
Yeah.
Have you seen The Adventures yet?
No.
Have you?
You mean The Avengers, not The Adventures.
Have you seen The Avengers?
No.
No, I haven't either. I've got to see...
I can't decide whether I need to see that or not.
You were going to go see it after the show the other night, weren't you?
Yeah, but I had a podcast to do instead.
Yeah,
I've got to rush out and get Captain America because I missed Captain America.
I missed all of them.
Oh, you've got lots of catching up to do, Graham.
Yeah, but I'm not going to.
You're not? No.
But if this one's really good, I might... Well, can I watch it on its own?
I don't know. Let us know. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au. Should Graham watch The Avengers?
Without having watched any of the others.
Yeah.
You might want to go back and have a look if you're going to go see...
Swanee says, yes, I can.
Prometheus. Just go back and have a look at one of Ridley Scott's beautiful films from early on in the piece called Aliens. Looks very similar. When we saw the trailer the other day,
Sort of a kind of Clayton's prequel, isn't it?
It is. Clayton's is the word. So,
okay, is it not any good?
I don't know. I haven't seen it yet, but the special effects in the trailer looks good, but quite often the trailer does sort of
That's where you're going to find all the best shots,
isn't it?
They
pick the best bits, don't they? Yeah.
Red 5 in our chat room says, they say you need to see Thor. Yeah, I saw Thor.
What's Thor?
Thor was a movie. I think that was the last one.
Yeah, the god of something or other, wasn't it?
Yeah, Thor was the last one before... prior to the Avengers, I think.
Oh, Gareth also says it's fine as a standalone. Swanee says he didn't see Thor and he heard that it was nonsense and he understood the Avengers fine.
Oh, that's all right.
So,
all right, moving on to some technological type sort of news, bit of telco stuff around this evening. RIM, the people who make BlackBerry, otherwise known as Research in Motion, had a bit of a do in Europe.
A bit of a dough?
Yeah.
Yep.
Anyway, they launched this new thing called the BlackBerry 10. Now, if you had thought that BlackBerry was on its last legs...
Yeah, which we thought it
which
was.
We all thought it was. They've turned around and they've come out with this new gadget, which will be released later, apparently, in the year. But and the demo model that they had there didn't have any phone call capability, so you couldn't do any calls on it or anything like that. So I think they've just basically made a smartphone and put it together. But
just to get a bit of a feel for the interface.
Yeah, and the interface is interesting. It's a bit... Windows-ish, sort of, you know, that tablet-y sort of look and feel with words hanging off screens and stuff like that. So, but a few interesting little renovations. But I don't know whether it's, you know, is RIM really, have they got a chance? Has it got a...
Well, didn't they say that they were going to concentrate on businesses and enterprise stuff and not on consumer stuff? So I take it this is a business tool. This isn't a consumer phone.
Well, this was at BlackBerry World 2012's opening keynote, and they presented the BlackBerry 10 the other day. And RIM's pinned its future on this particular phone. The platform combines the best of BlackBerry 7, and I'm not familiar with the BlackBerry. I've never owned one. I've only ever been frustrated by trying to get people's mail working on them and things like that. It's on a need-to-know basis, I think, with this mob. Best of BlackBerry 7 and the Playbook OS 2.0, and will serve as RIM's mobile computing platform coming up fairly shortly. So, RIM didn't give much away at the press conference apart from the fact of the look and feel, and I don't think you can make calls on it. So,
Now, they're not the only people around who've released a new phone in the last few days either, are they?
No, Dr. Owen, Samsung apparently.
Samsung?
Now, Samsung handsets are going gangbusters out there in the world of hardware. Traditionally,
yes.
Traditionally, they run the Android operating system.
They do.
But have you got your notes there?
I do have my notes here. A feature which I thought was really, really good, jumped out at me, was you get really frustrated when you pick your phone up and you're looking at it and the screen, you're reading an email, for example, and the screen just starts to fade and turn off. And you think, no, yes. No, I'm still using the, you know, come back.
All the time.
And you have to actually go out of your way to touch the display, yes, to make it stay alive.
Yes.
The new Galaxy S3 has got a feature where the phone itself uses a front-facing camera and it knows if you're still looking at it, so it will keep the display on.
So the phone is watching you?
Yes.
Big Brother is watching me from, yes, my Samsung phone.
How does it do that?
Galaxy
S3. Does it have a camera on it?
It's very clever, yes.
It has facial recognition.
Well, lots of phones have front-facing cameras that face towards the user.
Traditionally, I would have thought they'd chew through battery, wouldn't they? Obviously, they've got bigger batteries there now. Maybe you can turn it off.
It says, Andrew's still watching me. I'm not going to turn the display off. And then you put the phone down, and it says, oh, yeah, no one's looking at me at the moment. I'll switch off the display.
That's a nice feature.
Does it eyeball you or something?
Yeah. Yeah. I thought that was a great idea. I thought, well, that's clever. It's simple, but it's clever, and it will help. The other thing which is clever is it knows when it's not in use. It knows because it's not being moved and there's no one looking at it. So it doesn't, it'll beep or vibrate or whatever if there's a call or a message. But then when it gets picked up again and you look at it, it'll beep and vibrate again just to alert you straight away that you've missed a call or there's messages waiting. So that's a good feature. I think it's going to run on Ice Cream Sandwich operating system, Android 4.0 ICS.
4.04, I thought I saw.
4.04,
which is nice.
Is it?
Yeah, that's what we're running.
That's not what I'm running yet.
It's not what I'm running. You're bleeding edge, Andrew. Bleeding edge technology.
Bleeding.
Yeah.
Bleeding.
But there is one bad thing about this.
What's the bad thing?
And that's that Samsung Australia haven't said a peep about it.
No. Be released in Europe. I don't think there's actually a release date for the US just yet. Certainly not for Australia.
There's certainly not one for Australia, no.
The frequencies might be skew ball for us.
The launch in Europe that got press people there from all over the world, but hardly anyone from Australia. I think there's only one Australian there, and he was a freelancer.
Oh, okay.
Integrated NFC chip.
So you can do your banking.
Yeah.
Just wave your phone across the banking.
Yeah,
that's
cool.
Good.
That's cool.
And LTE, 4G, all that sort of good stuff?
No.
Yes? No?
No. On the way.
Future
model.
That could be why they didn't target us.
Yeah, maybe it'll come to Australia with LTE in it.
Possible
at a future date. Samsung, lift your game. I want
Samsung.
One.
Yep.
Some interesting news.
Send me
though.
One.
Graham's touting now. He's going to become a phone reviewer only of Samsung. By the looks of it. Last week, Samsung recorded a record US $5.2 billion quarterly profit. That's profit. That's not bad in this current economic. $5.2 billion
for a quarter.
For a quarter.
That's good money.
Wouldn't mind a bit of that.
Absolutely. Now, this was boosted by the Galaxy S2 smartphones, whose sales outstripped the iPhone.
Look, they are going gangbusters. You do see a lot of them about, and people are always talking about them and always using them.
You see them in a lot of the phone shops these days. Very front and pride of place. Samsung, this is also a very interesting statistic. Samsung's handset division moved more than 20,000 Galaxy phones an hour in that first quarter, which contributed to most of its operating profits. Now, that's a money tree, isn't it? Selling 20,000 handsets every hour.
Per hour.
Globally.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. Wonder what Apple do? Interesting to know.
Probably similar stats, similar numbers.
Yeah. Anyway, so the new S3 will have a 4.8-inch touchscreen, 8-megapixel camera. You probably went over this, Dr. Ron, but I'll just say it again anyway. And we'll use the latest version of the Google software, which we've just discussed. So I don't know. Maybe it's a viable option when you all come out of contract after you've done your 2-year stint. You'll be looking around for a new handset in the not too distant.
I'm still in my 2-year contract with mine, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah?
My HTC, what have I got? Desire. HTC Desire.
Yeah, we've all got one of those.
Yeah.
They work really well. But they are getting a bit old now. They've been around. They're a stayer. There's a lot of them around.
I'm not ready to give mine up because I spent money to get a car kit for it.
Oh, you should have bought one of the car kits where you just keep the car kit and swap the bracket and then just re-Bluetooth.
Well, it is actually, yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
So you only spend, rather than spend a whole new car kit, you just spend the cradle.
That's half the cost.
Yeah.
It came in 2 bits and, so I have to replace half of it. No, not ready for that yet. No, I'll keep mine going.
Okay. Optus are going to cut some jobs. $750 in the name of science.
Ouch.
Oh, actually, in the name of the bottom line,
jobs.
I think.
750 jobs.
Yeah. What did I say?
Bucks.
Did I? Yeah. Well, probably they'll get about a bit more than that. But yes,
I'll save a bit more than
that. Redundant, more than 750 of a 9,700 strong. What's that, a little less than 10% of
its
workforce?
Yeah, about 8%. Yeah, that's huge,
that's
isn't it?
That's a big hack.
It is. It
wonder
is.
Why. Bottom line, obviously.
Yeah, yep. They want to remain competitive, they've said, and they need a sustainable cost structure. If they keep these people on, it's going to cost them too much money.
Significant cuts were expected, however, as Optus merged to fit a restructure in line with its parent company. So obviously Singtel have gone first.
Singtel, yep.
And also they're doing that because of internal restructure that consolidated consumer functions into three divisions. So they've obviously gone the take four and make it three and done a bit of a rejig to pull everything in line with everybody else.
Senior and middle management.
That's a lot of jobs.
Mm.
I wonder if that's just on a nationwide thing or whether it's all coming from... Where's the head office? Are they Sydney-based?
Sydney, yeah. And most of the jobs, I think, were... Or a high percentage of the jobs that were going to be made redundant were in Sydney. 500 Sydney staff, according to Sydney Morning Herald article.
So 500 in Sydney, yeah. And that must be, obviously, 250 else around the rest of the country.
From the rest of the country, yeah. Two-thirds of the redundancies would come from the headquarters in North Ryde, with the remainder in the ACT, Queensland, South Australia and Victoria, an Optus spokesperson said.
Did they? Of course they would. All right. That's interesting.
That's an enormous amount. Imagine if, you know, at your work, wherever you are working at the moment.
I haven't got that many people to get rid of.
Well, that's right. But you had you got a memo saying, we're going to cut 8% of our workforce.
Yeah.
You know, if you stand up and look around and you can see, 10 people, then you might, one of those people's going to lose their job shortly.
Yeah, indeed. Have you unplugged my power supply again, Dr. Ron? I've got no power over here on my laptop.
Oh. No. Do you have a power problem?
Yeah, I've got, so we'll have to go to another break, surely.
that's serious.
Oh, it's getting like that. In other news, which I thought this came across my desk in the form of a press release from the Optus organisation, they're going to join forces with Vodafone to build 500 joint sites, joint as in radio sites,
yes,
for telecommunications and stuff like that. Thank you, Graham. He's going to do some technical work for me here.
That's what he does. He's good at it.
It's good. Yep. Yeah. So anyway, it's... Is that because, you can't beat them, join them type sort of thing, rather than spend all this money individually to bolster your mobile phone network? Hey, let's pair up and share the love and share the load and see if we can dent in, make some inway into the incumbent.
Well, look, decisions of this size and this nature are ultimately made by accountants. And it would suggest that it's probably, is like we've just been discussing, they're very, very concerned about their bottom line. It probably makes sense financially for them to... partner with somebody like Vodafone, rather than reinvent the wheel.
Now they've signed on an understanding, which means that they haven't done anything. They just agree in principle. I think that's what MUO is, or whatever it is.
Memorandum of understanding.
Yeah, there you go. MOU. So they're about to do it. How they're going to do it? Obviously, we'll get details as that happens, as they decide to roll out. But the other thing I was going to ask, what's happening with Three these days? Have you ever... So they're still in shopping centres as you walk through the place, but their advertising seems to have ceased. They've very much gone under the banner of Vodafone.
Well, that's inevitable.
It was.
You're talking about the Three brand.
Yeah, the Three brand,
which is,
yeah.
Yeah, so Vodafone are probably slowly just letting it die natural.
Assimilated it into the Borg.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, so we're really back down to the Vodafone, Optuses and Telstras of the world now, and everyone else is just a resold product of one of those big carriers.
Let us know if you're a Three customer and you just suddenly started getting accounts from Vodafone.
Yeah, well, that's probably on the cards too, isn't it? I used to have a Three account. I should log in, see if it still lets me in. See if we can work out what's going on.
I really hope it doesn't.
Oh, dear. Well, their website was sort of somewhat sad in a lot of respects. I used to find it very frustrating. But having said that, I haven't found one that's really easy to use, if you know what I mean. Telco websites tend to do that too. They tend to confuse you more so than I think they work on the premise that if you actually, if they throw enough obstacles in the way, you'll eventually give up and go somewhere else and not worry about it or something like that.
But, well, especially in terms of pricing, we've discussed that before as well.
Yeah.
It's in their interest for you not to know what's going on and for you not to be able to compare stuff
easily. Oh, yeah. Hide the true value of what you're buying in a cap.
Yeah, that's why they do it.
Way to go. Microsoft Windows 8 tablets. I use all those words in one small foul swoop because analysts, in particular analysts from a firm called NPD, have predicted that Microsoft's Windows 8 on these ARM devices are basically going to have very minor market share compared to what everybody else's tablets are. They've left it too late, too long.
And people are obviously, well, these analysts predict that people are going to stick with the known brands, either the Samsungs and the Apples and all those sort of things.
And the known operating systems.
Yeah, with the known operating systems. Because Windows 8 is scheduled for a release later this year.
We still don't have a date, do we?
No. But I'd be tipping...
Q3, they're saying.
Yeah, right, they'll want to get it out, I reckon, in the stores for the American summer. No, our summer. Their winter. Would that be right? Yeah, in quarter three.
We're going into this.
I get awfully confused with the American quarters because they're not like ours. So, and I don't mean that mathematically. They're just displaced differently. Like their financial year is to December, like ours is to July. But anyway, that's irrelevant, really, isn't it? Windows 8 internet tablets will be overshadowed by the Windows 8 RT, the runtime tablets, according to the NPD, which is the analyst firm. But Windows' share of the total tablet market will grow from 1.5% in 2012 to just 7.5%. Predicted by 2017. So that's not much of a market share. That's a bit like Nokia at the moment, isn't it? About that, they'd have that sort of share in handsets. They're falling out of favour rapidly.
Yeah.
So do you reckon Microsoft have just left their tablets too late, too long?
Yeah, possibly so. Did you see what they did with Barnes & Noble during the week as well?
Oh, the
what did they do?
This is the Kindle thing.
With the online bookstore. Yeah, well, that's not the Kindle. Barnes & Noble have their Nook e-reader, which is their version of the Amazon Kindle. They're going. Microsoft wants to go head to head with Amazon and bust up the Amazon and Apple. You know, the dominance
duopoly.
Well, yeah, they have a very strong presence in terms of their e-book readers, and so Microsoft has teamed up with Barnes and Noble. Microsoft's thrown its support behind the Nook e-reader, and this is ahead of the launch of the, like you were saying, the touch-enabled Windows 8 operating system later this year. The interesting thing that I thought was that Microsoft obviously had in the ongoing patent wars, they've had patent lawsuits filed against Google and its Android operating system for a long time, but they've had to drop that quietly, teaming up with Barnes & Noble because the Nook e-reader runs Android. So that was something that happened quietly in the background.
Very discreetly, wasn't it?
Yeah, a good injection of cash for Barnes & Noble. I think the deal's worth a bit over $600 million over a few years, over 5 years. It's Microsoft trying to stay current, trying to keep up, but like you're saying, Andrew, is it a little bit too late for them?
Yeah. Well, just looking...
I wouldn't write them off just quietly. I think that a tablet that runs a real operating system, as opposed to a phone operating system, might just have some appeal in some areas.
Maybe. You could be right.
Look, I'd be keen to try it, Graeme, and what you're saying is correct. I went into a Telstra shop during the week. I was just browsing and having a look to see what was around.
Yes.
I had a play with
the
latest...
Didn't know you had time to kill?
Oh, I've got lots of spare time these days, you know. Having, you know...
Moving on.
Andrew's roffling. yes. I was looking at the tablets that they had on display there. And
you haven't learned your
latest,
lesson yet?
Looked at the latest Samsung. I was looking at the latest Samsung Galaxy Tab. Is it the 8.9? Correct me if I'm wrong. The slightly smaller form factor than the...
I don't know.
10.1.
I haven't really paid too much attention to tablets of recent times.
This is my understanding is that the Samsung tablets are supposed to be the Rolls Royce of Android tablets. And it's sitting beside an iPad, the latest Apple iPad. And by comparison, it's still slow, it's chuggy, it's, you know, you drag your finger across the screen and the icons go gunk, 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 gunk across the screen. And you pick up an iPad and it's just, you know, it's beautiful. It just works, swish, swish, swish. It's nice and fast. Android, you know, devices have still got a long way to go to catch up. They really do. And if the Samsung is the best that manufacturers can do running the Android operating system, still got a lot of work to do.
Well, you've got to bear in mind that the Android operating system isn't all that old. It's not that mature compared to others that are around there. Like Apple have been at it for years and stuff like that.
But
so
there's also the problem that...
And they maintain their hardware.
It's typical of what's been happening on PCs for years is that the machines have the hardware in it built to a price... the developers are working on the very biggest and best and greatest, so they build software and apps that make full use of the hardware that's available. And then you get an actual real tablet out in the marketplace, and it's only barely got enough power to do what it needs to do. What Apple can do, of course, is they can make sure that they keep control of that balancing act because they control both the hardware and the software. but the hardware and the software aren't both controlled by the same people in the Android world.
Yep.
So you get, what we really need is a tablet that's got way over spec processor and memory so that it can be smooth.
Mm.
But no one's making them.
I've still got my very first Apple tablet, the iPad 1.
iPad first generation. Yep.
And that still goes like a trooper. It has been dropped, unlike the iPhone 4, which I got my wife, which has had the glass smashed in the corner. Ooh. The iPad is a very resilient device. It takes a good whack and a good pounding, and it's kiddie-proof too. And that's also another thing I think you need to take into consideration if you're buying a tablet of that sort of sort. How is it going to hold up in the general home environment with young children around?
Well, we'll be keen to have a play with Windows 8. We'll see what it does. We'll put it through the hoops, and we'll report back. I know we've trialed it in the past, and we've sort of, like, early Windows days. Phone, and we've given up, but yeah, it's early days, yeah.
I just, going back to what we're talking about with the tablets too and Windows 8 share, the market share for it, I sort of, if you could imagine 100%, and there's the three operating systems. There's Windows, or Windows 8, should I say. There is iOS, and of course there's all the flavors of Android, all the other guys, WebOS's and all that, which Rim are using.
That form the 1%.
Yeah, just forget about them.
Yep.
So, and what's happening at the moment, 2012, according to NPD, we're seeing the most dominance that iOS is going to have in 2012, 2013. Then it's going to fall back from basically just shy of 75% of the market back to about 60% of the market. And what's going to take that space is predominantly going to be Android, with up to probably about 6 or 8% of that being Microsoft, from 1.5 up to about 8%. So they're not predicting a huge early days influx into that. It's a bit like their phone system too.
If you go and read the forums where the enthusiast types are talking, the tablet enthusiast types are talking about what they're looking forward to, a lot of people who are into tablets particularly are looking forward to Windows 8, which is an interesting thing I found reading some forums this week. So, it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out.
It will.
Bear in mind as well, with what you're saying about the clunkiness and so on of Android, that almost every Android device that's around at the moment is running a very old version of Android. They're all running 2.3 or around about that sort of vintage of Android. And that's getting quite old now. What's about to happen is a lot of devices are going to start coming out with Android 4, Ice Cream Sandwich, or version 3 for the tablets.
So 2.3 is Gingerbread, Graham, is that right?
That's right.
It's like,
yeah,
two major versions, yeah, behind what is current.
Yeah, Ice Cream Sandwich version 4 is it's going to be quite different. So you might find that makes a bit of a difference too. I certainly can't wait to try it out on my tablet. I know it's coming for my tablet.
What's your tablet?
It's a ThinkPad tablet, a Lenovo ThinkPad tablet. And I was just looking up the release dates of when they're going to release the update that's going to put ICS on it. And it's being released for
Ice Cream Sandwich.
Ice Cream Sandwich, yep. It's going to be released for some parts of the world, the US and the UK and Western Europe, I think, in late May, late this month. But ROW, if you can work out what that stands for, and a couple of other places.
Right of way?
Rest of world.
That's it?
Don't get it till the end of June. So around about that sort of time, I'll be very excited. I'll be doing an update on my Lenovo tablet, and I'll be talking a bit more about the next big version of Android, which is Ice Cream Sandwich version 4.
That's what you're running on your mobile phone,
yeah,
Andrew.
And it's not completely... I'm living on the edge, as you said, the bleeding edge, and I have cut my finger a few occasions there too. So,
but it's sharp. It's fast, is it?
It is fast, but there are some apps that just have it, like cameras and things like that, built into the device, which this particular version I was using had some issues. They sent out a new fix, and they fixed it, and it's all good. But
oh, good.
You do. You live on the edge. It's not like it's plain sailing with the earlier versions. All right, before we go to the break, when we come back from the break, we're going to talk about backing up and stuff like that, which I think is very relevant in this day and age.
Cool.
I just wanted to raise the flag a little bit about Google and the Wi-Fi snooping. Remember the Wi-Fi snooping shenanigans that took place some time back?
Yeah, that storm in a teacup. Are we going to go back to that, are
it's
we?
It's coming back. The storm is, they're stirring the tea counterclockwise now, and it's going the other way. But a US government investigation into Google's ability to collect data from unsecured Wi-Fi networks using its fleet of streetcars has found that several employees actually knew that they were doing that in the first place. Now, this is shades of Rupert Murdoch, isn't it, with their ECS and stuff like that?
Yeah, but people would know that because it was written into the device.
Any person dissecting the code or the results would say, oh, there's a lat long and a MAC address.
Well, there were people that were obviously writing the software to control the cars that were capturing all the information. Of course, they would have known that that was in there.
Yeah.
It was just Google was saying that it wasn't sanctioned or something originally.
Oh, I can't remember that. I think they just...
It wasn't approved.
That's absolute. It was all...
They said, oh, yeah, someone
in the clear
wrote
information anyway that people are openly broadcasting. I don't know why there's a fuss about it. Move on.
Yeah, well, I think it was pretty much in the early days, if you can't baffle them with science, stun them with other things, and it all disappeared off. But now, apparently, Google's looking to cop a $10 million fine for a Safari gaffe too, which is all surrounding all this sort of stuff. And privacy regulators in the Netherlands and Germany claimed that Google had duped them during their investigations following Google's release of the FCC's report into this wireless investigation thing. And now that they've found an issue with Safari, well, there's nothing like, as Graham was just sort of saying, it's storm in a teacup sort of stuff, and they'll find anything they can to sort of lever into it. But anyway, it's worth going and having a chat about what Google's up to in their Wi-Fi snooping areas.
30 seconds of ad clicks, I'll just pay it, I'll be right.
Yeah, it's pretty much like that. Anyway, we're going to talk about the wonders of backing up. Dr. Ron, do you back up?
I do.
Yeah, well, you can tell us about how you do it down the track.
Yeah, everyone's different.
I'm sure
everyone
Graham
has
their own
preferences and their own options, but it'll be interesting.
Anyway, and we've got a view from the couch coming up after this too.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Oh, what does this button do? Hello, everybody.
But I buck the trend on the hive mind that is Tech Talk Radio.
Which is patently absurd.
It is absurd, exactly right.
But anyway, my point is...
Moving along.
My point is...
And why do you have to change the phone number?
That's a good question, Dr. Ron. Why?
If they're that clueless, they should not be answering the phone.
I can't see a blue tin. I can't see a blue tin.
Entertaining, informative and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
They're talking about headphones in the chat room.
Are they?
Yeah.
Oh.
I like my new Sennheiser HD408s.
Is this an ad?
No, it's not, because I paid a lot of money for them.
Oh.
Yeah, Sennheiser don't give us anything for nothing.
No.
But thank you, Graham, good for securing, securing those for us.
Oh, you've got them on tonight, haven't you?
I've got them on. I'm trying.
Your headphones, they sound all right?
They sound good.
Good.
These are a little bit bassy. Them old Sennheisers.
I'll have to swap during the show because I've got my old ones on, which are very similar to that.
They like 440s or something.
Yeah, something like that.
They're good.
Yeah. The view from the couch, we're about to go to it. It's all about backing up stuff. We'll talk about it after the show.
Respected technology journalist Adam Turner prepares a view from the couch every week.
He does. And this week is no exception. The one thing I'd like to add into the mix for this week's view from the couch is he's about to throw 10 truckloads of URLs at you about backup sites.
Oi!
Now, I've posted them in the chat if you're listening to us live, but if you're not listening to us live, head over to the Tech Talk Radio website and the menu at the top there, you can do the pull down and go to view from the couch and you'll see them all there. So as if you're sitting there thinking, oh, what was that? What was that? And you can also hear Adam's view from the couch again by going there as well. There's a little icon there. You can click the button and listen to it again and hear all the information that he's about to give you, because it's good.
I'll put a link in the show notes if you're not listening live. That's okay if you can't see the chat from where you are.
They're a very good idea. Anyway, here's this week's View from the Couch.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch.
Google Drive is the latest in a long list of online backup tools, but it's important to weigh up your options carefully before taking the plunge into online backup. If you don't have a solo backup strategy, you could lose everything in a heartbeat. I'm not exaggerating. Everything from school assignments, work reports, great recipes, family photos, everything on your computer lost forever. In the years to come, there'll be plenty of people who don't have baby photos to show at their 21st birthday after their parents lost everything in a tech disaster. Backup's even more important if you run your own business. Can you afford to start again from scratch? Even if you can get the business back on its feet, will your customers ever trust you again? Don't think it can't happen to you. Fire, flood, theft, virus, power surge, hardware failure, plain old human error are just some of the threats to your computers and the precious data that lies within. The risk is even greater if your data lives on a notebook, tablet or smartphone, which is exposed to the rough and tumble of life on the road. Keeping backups on a USB drive is a good start, but remember that a disaster such as fire or theft which claims your computer could also most likely claim your backups. That's why it's important to keep off-site backups, perhaps online. Enter Google Drive. Online storage is certainly nothing new, and Google is surprisingly late on the scene with its new Google Drive. It offers everyone with a Gmail account 5GB of free online storage. Of course, it was already possible to upload any file type to a Google Docs account via your browser. What's really new here is the way you can interact with Google's online storage space. Google has released a new desktop application which runs in the background on your computer and automatically synchronizes your files between a folder on your computer and the online Google Drive. It can also sync your files between different computers. Now, plenty of other services can already do this, and Dropbox and SugarSync are probably two of the most popular. If you're already using one of these, Google Drive probably won't offer enough to win you over. It's obviously early days for Google Drive, but what you think of it so far depends on what you're hoping for. It's the new interface for Google Docs, which is Google's online office suite, a service which lets you edit documents in any browser. Unfortunately, the integration between Google Drive and Google Docs is pretty disappointing. Like I said, your opinion of Google Drive will depend on what you want it to do, so I'll give you a quick idea of where I'm coming from. I've been using Google Docs for about 4 years as my primary word processor. I've then been using Simplicity to keep offline backups of all my Google Docs files as an insurance policy in case Google Docs or my ISP suffers a significant outage. As an extra insurance policy, I can access the internet through my Telstra phone or my Vodafone Wi-Fi hotspot. Now, along with these other services, I use Jungle Disk to automatically back up files such as my photos from my various computers to Amazon's S3 online storage service. Some people will look to Google Drive as a simple and convenient way to back up all the important files on their desktop computer. It's pretty straightforward. Just download and install the Google Drive software on your computer, put in your Google login details, and it creates a new folder. Anything you put in that folder is automatically uploaded to Google Drive. Unfortunately, you can't point the Google Drive software at existing folders on your computer. If you try to, you'll be told that you must select an empty folder. This is going to frustrate people who just want a simple point-and-click backup solution and don't want to have to reorganize all the files on their computer. Now, to be fair, Dropbox behaves the same way, although there are some workarounds. That's because they're both designed primarily for syncing documents rather than backing up documents. I know that sounds like I'm splitting hairs, but there's a difference. An online backup service simply copies your files to an online folder to keep them safe. An online sync service lets you create a folder on multiple computers and keep the contents in sync. So if you change a file on one computer, it then changes that file in the folders on the other computers. Now, these sync services often keep an online copy as well, which is a handy backup, but backup is not their primary job. Most people don't want to restructure the folders on their computer just to suit an online storage service such as Google Drive. They just want to point their backup software at their existing My Documents or My Pictures folder and click Go. Google Drive won't let you do this. You need to move everything you want to backup into the Google Drive folder. Another frustration is that the Google Drive desktop software offers no flexibility in terms of which files are backed up and how often they're backed up, nor can you throttle the upload speeds to stop it choking your internet connection, which is a handy feature that's built into Dropbox and a lot of these other services. If backup is your primary concern, then backup services such as Jungle Disk, Mozy, Carbonite are much less hassle than Google Docs and Dropbox, and they offer a lot more flexibility. There's no need to shuffle around files, you just tell the desktop software what you want to backup and it does the rest. SugarSync behaves the same way. Meanwhile, some backup services such as Jungle Disk have added Dropbox-style sync features which run alongside your backup features. Now, I'm not saying that Google Drive is useless. I'm just saying that you need to choose the right tool for the job, depending on what you're trying to do. If you're trying to keep folders in sync across multiple computers with the added advantage of an online copy, then Google Drive could be right for you, although I'd take a look at Dropbox. Google Docs integration would seem to be the icing on the cake, which might win you across to Google Drive from something like Dropbox. But Google Drive and Google Docs don't work together in the way that you'd think they might. I was hoping that Google Drive would automatically download a copy of all my Google Docs files onto my computer as an offline backup in case Google suffers an outage. Like I said, I currently use a service called Syncplicity for this. I also hoped that Google Drive would let me upload files from my computer and edit them online in Google Docs, but I was disappointed on both counts. When it comes to syncing Google Docs files offline, the Google Drive software only downloads a link to your documents and spreadsheets. Click on one to open and you're taken to the browser to edit the online version. If you're offline, you're out of luck. The file isn't actually downloaded to your computer, so it's useless as an offline backup option. It does, however, download full copies of some file format, such as PDF. Meanwhile, if I create a document on my computer and drop it into the Google Drive sync folder, I can read it online, but I can't edit it in Google Docs. So if, like me, you are hoping for the best of both worlds here, you'll probably be disappointed. Google Docs does offer an offline mode in Chrome, but it doesn't offer the same flexibility and protection as a full standalone offline backup. To be fair, Microsoft and Apple's offerings also have their shortcomings. Microsoft SkyDrive, Mesh, and Office web apps don't fully integrate for a smooth online and offline editing. Meanwhile, Apple's iCloud only syncs iWork documents between iGadgets and won't sync them with Macs. It's early days for Google Docs, and I'm certainly not writing it off. And it seems that some of the features that I'm looking for are on the roadmap. But right now, it's fair to say that Google Drive is far from the killer service that it has the potential to be. Until then, it's going to struggle to win people away from their current online backup and syncing services.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
That got the audience going here in the studio, Graham.
Well, I had a bit of a rant quietly in the studio at the start of that piece.
Quietly?
But,
quietly?
Well. But I think Adam redeemed himself later on in the segment, so perhaps I won't be quite as strenuous as I was earlier on in the piece.
What was it that you took issue with?
The confusion between a syncing application and a backup application. Google Drive is not a backup solution. Google Drive is a sync solution.
Yep.
But Adam addressed that later on in his piece. But yes, because Andrew had been spruiking that we were going to talk about backups.
Well, I do want to talk about backups. Because I've got some real conundrum.
Yes, and the backups were the first thing that Adam mentioned, and then he mentioned Google Drive in the next breath. I was a bit upset about that because it's not a backup solution. It's a syncing solution.
During the week, I've been trying out some of the new stuff that's been around, and I did sort of just try a Google Drive login just because I could.
Yes.
And I found everything that Adam had spruced about, that is, you've got to have its own drive, and you've got to drop stuff into it, and you go, well, what's the purpose of that when you want to just do a simple syncing between one particular
machine
and another?
Yeah, that is unfortunate, because a lot of people will operate like I do. I've got a folder in my documents that has all my business stuff in. It's a folder called My Business Name, and it's got all my business documents in. And I wanted to sync that folder with Google Docs, and it wouldn't let me do that. I would have to create a Google Docs folder and then move my GC support folder into that.
Mm.
That's not messy,
right.
Isn't it? It's messy.
Not right. But I don't... Well,
it's not quite the way I would have chosen to do it, but it's not quite a good enough, because I can still put the Google Docs folder or the Google Drive folder in my documents, and it's just one more level. So I've got to go to the Google Drive folder and then to my GC support folder. But
you just want it to be easy, though. You just want to say, I want to
you
back
do,
up.
Yeah.
You want to back up your photos. You want to back up or sync whichever
you want
you choose to
in
do.
In the case of Google Drive, we're talking about a sync solution, not a backup solution.
And you want to be able to move them around as you see fit easily and not have to worry about it. So every time you do a My Photos, great, it does it. Now, my dilemma is that most modern digital cameras these days are fairly big when it comes to file sizes. Like, we're just doing the maths during the show. Like, one of the cameras that I've got shoots a, 8 megapixel on average JPEG, which is around about a 23 megapixel RAW file. And when you think about it, if you're archiving, if you're doing happy snaps, you don't really need the RAW file. The JPEGs are normally pretty good to print out on the local bubble jet printer and stick them up on the wall in the fridge for the kids. But at the end of the day,
even the RAW files, you don't need to keep them long term. You keep them long enough to go through the files, find the ones you want to keep, edit them, clean them up, and then keep the JPEGs that are the output, the result.
Yeah, there are a lot of shops these days that do these great canvas prints, and they're really good for those sort of things. You can send them a nice high-res image and they print on canvases for you, which are really great. Then they staple them up on a timber frame and you hang them up on the wall. Really good. But anyway, my point is that if like during the course of the week, I went to my daughter's basketball game on Saturday morning and I thought, I'll take the camera along and I'll try it out with a nice long lens on it and et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, I came back
with... You had it in RAW mode or high-quality JPEG mode?
Both.
Okay.
So it was shooting both. So
yeah, because you can set some cameras to say... You want to take a photo, write a JPEG, and write the raw data.
So every time I pressed the button, it was 30 meg, which is a lot. Now,
and a fast card as well.
But even forget about that. Just talk about the JPEGs, which on average are around about 6 to 8 meg a thing. You can go through those at a ferocious rate. Like you can come back with easily nearly a gig of photos, especially if you have, like I have, in a motor drive where I was trying it out to try and get the good shot when the basketball was just in the right position. It was a bit like Lone Pine at basketball on the weekend. The stretchers were coming on and carrying them off and all that. So it was a bit of a... I probably shouldn't have taken the camera that day because every time I do take the camera, something like that happens. But at the end of the day, what do you do with the files? Because the way I back my photos up at home is I back them up on year and month so that I can go to a birthday in a particular year by going to whatever the date might happen to be or an event or something like that. Now, my photos go back to probably... Or my digital photos go back to 1998 or something like that. I think when I got my digital camera, the first one, and they're only a couple of hundred meg. Today they're a couple of hundred gig.
Yeah,
what do you do with them? How do you back them up? I've tried. Obviously, that's too big for an internet type sort of solution. Your bandwidth in like every time you do it, it's going to churn through a gig of bandwidth or thereabouts, if not more. In putting it up.
No,
and then secondly,
but hang on. You were saying you were shooting RAW and you were shooting hundreds of shots.
No, I don't keep my RAWs.
Well, that's the point. Don't back up your RAW ones. Use those for editing and then keep a few of them.
I've got gigs of JPEGs.
Well, don't keep every JPEG that you shoot.
Oh, that's hard on our family. I delete things. I get grilled over, why is this sequence?
Think
what
about
was
it.
This shot here missing?
Think about it the way that you would have done photos in the old days. You would shoot rolls and rolls of film. You'd go to an event.
It's a discipline thing, isn't it?
You'd shoot 5 or 6 rolls of 36 exposures. You'd go through the negatives. You'd say, I want to print that one, that one, that one, that one, and that one. And then you keep the best of the bunch.
Mm.
And you don't keep a gigabyte of photos from one event. You keep a dozen photos from one event.
Mm, yes, maybe. I'm hearing you, and I think, yes, great idea. I've got to explain that to she who likes keeping every photo that's taken and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, give her my number. I'll explain it to her.
Okay, good. I will. Yes, I've got quite a bit then. And what I've decided or what I've been doing lately is I now have a hard drive. I just go down to the local shop and pick myself up a gig of hard drive and just move them all across that, and I have... obviously, the
probably a terabyte of hard drive these days.
Sorry. Yeah, you're right. Sorry, Freudian there. Anyway, and what I do is I drop it over to Mum and Dad's place, leave it over there so that my photos are backed up off-site, and I've got to remember to do it, and that's the discipline. I can't – I do it every 12 months.
It's always discipline.
Oh, it's hard.
Backup is always discipline.
It's hard. But anyway –
you've got to choose what to – it's like any archiving decision. Before technology, we still had the same thing of what do we keep, what do we throw away. Any archiving decision is one of those. You've got to decide what to keep. You've got to have the discipline to keep it. And if you don't, then you're taking the risk of losing them if you don't.
And my other, what I do with work is I've run two locations and they chat every night, overnight, and any file that's changed on the server, excluding video files, because they're pretty big, but any like document files or graphic files, Photoshop files, whatever it might happen to be, they just chat. So overnight it mirrors it to another server off-site.
Yep.
But I don't use any cloud stuff yet. I've tried and it hasn't quite worked for me, but that's just me. So everyone does it their own way. How do you do yours, Graham? What's your regime? Do you have a...
For some things, I just don't bother backing them up. I take the risk.
Yeah?
For some things...
Such as what? What would you not back up? Are we talking music? Are we talking photos? Are we talking tax returns? Traditionally, the tax office keep a copy of all that for you anyway.
Lots of random documents that really haven't not a lot of relevance. Lots of movies and things don't get backed up. That's fine. That's just a lot of space that isn't essential. My business stuff is synchronized automatically between my laptop and my main PC, and that provides a backup function as well. So that's an example of the crossover I was complaining about before between sync and backup.
Mm. It's an important distinction.
But I've always got my laptop with me, so if something bad happens at home, I'm either going to be at home and I'm going to grab my laptop as the one and only thing I grab as I go out the door, or I'm, you know, if I'm not at home, then I've got my laptop with me. It's got it, and all those things are synced. The business, the most important things, the business documents, the emails, the stuff that is important in that regard is all synced to an online service.
So
as well.
So, does it all happen seamlessly when you connect to your Wi-Fi network at home? It starts chatting and
yeah,
doing
more
that
or
sort
less
of stuff?
Seamlessly. Yeah, it all happens. It all happens over the internet. It all happens in the background.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's good, so you don't have to remember about it. But you do have to check every so often.
You do have to check, yeah, because every now and then the syncing thing decides to crash or not launch or do something strange.
And you get that syncing feeling.
And suddenly you realise, hang on, didn't I put that in this folder? Oh, I did that on the other machine and it's not here. So, yeah, you do have to check and you do have to keep an eye on it.
Dr. Ron?
Yeah, and there's a big difference as well, like Graham's saying, between syncing applications and backup applications.
Yeah.
And the way that you use these sorts of things, like in my mind...
And you can have some crossover, but yeah, you've just got to be aware of what you're doing and what the tool is designed to do.
That's it. And you have to be disciplined. You have to be very disciplined.
You do have to be disciplined. And you have to think about what you're doing and what your aims really are. What do you really need to keep? What's the important stuff?
Yep. Yep, that's correct. Now, you said before, Graham, there's...
And of course, I'm not in Andrew's situation where I've got a young family and kids growing up. And, of course, in that situation, the photographs are absolutely vital.
It's data hungry, let me tell you.
It'd be data hungry, and it's absolutely vital. There'd be very little that would be as important as the photos of the kids growing up. So, yeah, that's a different situation to my situation.
At the other end of the scale, there is stuff which is entirely replaceable, like you were saying, with some video that you might have, and
yeah.
It doesn't matter if you lose it, because you can just source it again.
That's exactly right, yeah.
So why bother wasting all the gigabytes of bandwidth?
No, that's the internet has backed that up for me.
Yep.
Yeah, there's lots of stuff like that. There's stuff that's completely and utterly replaceable.
Yep, yeah, for sure. What I do, Andrew, is two things. For the reason that you were saying... where you need to constantly check, or you should constantly check to make sure that the backups are working. I do stuff manually. I'll back up, I'll put all my data in one place on my computer, and that's like in my documents. I have a very structured My Documents folder, and you have to take some time to structure it so it makes sense and you know where everything is.
That's something that a lot of people miss out on, having a well-structured file system on your computer. Folder set up so you know where to find stuff. Things are organized in a sensible way that makes sense to you, so that you can go click, click, click to that folder. You know you're going to find what you're looking for.
Yep, yep, that's it.
No, and so many people get that wrong.
Without getting too technical or too geeky, so just get ready on the nerd alert just in case. On my main computer that I use at home, I've got... Oh, he's got the mouse there. He's fine.
Do you want the leaner one or do you want the...
No, I don't want leaner. Okay. I don't want leaner one. I've got...
Maybe that's why she didn't come in this week. Maybe I pushed the button.
On my main computer, or inside my main computer, I've got two disk drives. I've got a fast, what's called an SSD disk, a solid-state drive, so there's no moving parts, and that's what the operating system's installed on, and all the programs are installed on, so that's nice and fast, and if and when it fails, it can be replaced easily. I've then got, I think, like a terabyte or a 2 terabyte, a traditional disk inside the computer, and that is my documents... That is my documents, that disk, and it's all seamless. I don't go to another drive, like another
drive
letter.
So you've redirected my documents to that location.
Exactly.
Yep.
To that place. And then I know I can back up that disk, or I can take it out, and I can physically back it up if I need to, and I've got a backup of all my data and what is...
And if your computer crashes, you can just take that disk out and put it in another computer and keep working, yeah.
That's it. And if the SSD disk crashes, then that's not a problem. I can just reinstall the applications, and that's not an issue.
Yeah. And all the data's still sitting there, yeah.
All the data's still there. In terms of online backup, I use a service called Carbonite. Which is
Adam uses that. He mentioned that.
Yeah, it's sort of...
So does Damo the Geek in the chat. Carbonite is unlimited backup on a single machine. So,
that's
yeah, that sounds really good.
That's
Do you pay for that?
You do. You pay a small premium.
I'm going to go to the site because I linked them all in Adam's site.
Yep, it'll tell you the rates there. But it is unlimited backup for a single machine. And it just sits there and just trickles upstream in the background.
Less than $6 a month.
In your Windows Explorer, like on a PC, it changes the little folder icons. It'll put like a little amber... or a little yellow dot, like on a folder or a file on the icon to say that that's pending backup. And if something has been backed up and it's safe, then it's marked as green. But it works most of the time. You have to keep an eye on it, and you do have to manually sometimes steer it in the right direction.
Yep.
The other thing which I've been trialing of late is two things, is the Google Drive, not a backup solution, collaboration solution. and a syncing solution. And same with Dropbox. And Andrew and I've been playing around with Dropbox during the week.
Oh,
and
everybody again, in the world's got Dropbox. Yeah. I've had Dropbox for a while. I use Dropbox with a friend of mine, and we synchronize stuff between us all the time.
So you use it for synchronization, not for as a backup solution.
Use it for sharing. Yeah, in this case, so that
it's great for project based groups, isn't it?
Both be looking at the same data. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's how I go about it, Andrew. So I'd say manually I do backups. So I also use Carbonite, which is belt and braces in the background, and then experimenting with these other newer technologies for syncing and collaboration.
So carbonite.com.au, it's an Australian one. It's online, and $71.99 Australian for a year.
There you go. Not
unlimited.
Not a paid political announcement. I pay to use it, and it's just a service that I find that works.
But you have to pay to use you don't get everything for free in this world. You have to pay to get a really useful product, and that's not excessive.
That's it.
If you think about it, how much are you going to pay for an external disk to, and then have to do it manually, and then have to carry it somewhere else and put it off site, and then it's going to be out of date.
You've talked me into it, Graham. Yeah. I'm going to ditch my, I'm going to reclaim my portable drives, and maybe subscribe to something like this.
Have a look at. I mean, there are other alternatives. Well, the other thing, Andrew, not the be all and end all.
With
he's pointing pens at me now.
No, I know.
Ditching your portable drives. There's no rule that says you only have to use one backup solution.
No, correct.
In fact, the more backups you've got, the less likely you are to lose your stuff. If you've got a backup on an external disk and a backup on Carbonite, then you're protected against even less likely things. So you're more protected.
Yeah,
so
I agree.
You might have a natural disaster that, a bushfire comes through and burns your house and your parents' house where the disk is.
Big fire.
All right, they're a long way away. Okay. Where the disk is stored. You might have a virus that you don't realize is there for 6 months, and you infect your backup disk when you renew your backups. Okay. Now, your backup on Carbonite might save you from that. Yeah. Okay. Now, or Carbonite might go out of business, and suddenly tomorrow I can't access my Carbonite.
Yep, you've got no data.
Yeah.
No data in the cloud.
Now, that's more a valid point.
I mean, there's these... backing up is always a numbers game. It's a statistics game, and the more things you do, and the more diverse they are, the less likely it is that you're going to lose your data in the end. The odds multiply.
Yep. One thing we can tell you all with absolute certainty is that hard disks will fail.
Yep, guaranteed.
Oh yes.
Now the conversation we're having here right now, what would you do? Would you take it home and have this very same conversation with other members of your family? Because if you're listening to our show right now, chances are you've got somewhat of a backup regime already in place. It might be inadequate. It might be over the top. But chances are you've got one in place. But what about the people who don't? Well, you're going to take it home and have a chat to your mum, dad, your sister, your brother, your cousin, your uncle, whatever it is like that. Because chances are they've got a whole swag of photos or stuff like that too online, especially with this proliferation of digital cameras these days.
Yeah,
goodness
not
me.
Not just photos, but important business information.
I probably don't even think of
your
it.
Books, well, yeah, company books.
Different things are important to different people. For some things, their business is everything to them. It's their livelihood. It's their future. For some people, it's their family that's important to them. And for some people, it's both. So, yeah, everybody's got different backup needs. It's just important to have the discussion.
Adam Turner
and
says
I'm hoping that the people that are listening to this show, that our listeners, even our listeners that aren't tech head listeners, our listeners that are just listening to learn a little bit about what's going on, like Meryl, who was who emailed earlier on in the show,
like Meryl, yep,
that this will give them the impetus to have that discussion, even though perhaps otherwise they wouldn't have. So. And to just give some thought, you don't need to be a rocket scientist to set up Carbonite. If you can use your computer, you can do that.
Yeah, I'll get the tech person in your family to help you out.
Absolutely.
Adam uses Jungle Disk, he says in the chat room.
Yeah,
which can do backup and sync, so as two separate things.
Yep.
Damo has a good suggestion: three forms of redundancy stored in two locations with at least one online. I like that.
And he doesn't drink Valvoline. Oh, he does drink Valvoline.
Yeah, so one form of redundancy might be having a redundant disk, so using a NAS server that's got RAID, so if a disk fails, you don't lose your data.
Yep.
That might be redundancy number one. The redundancy number two might be the hard disks that's stored at your parents' place, and redundancy number three is the online backup.
Cloud. Yeah.
So, yeah, and that makes sense. That's you're pretty safe then. It would take a major disaster to take you offline.
So, as Adam said, the kids will get to see that year of photos that would otherwise go missing.
Yeah.
Because I reckon there'll be quite a few people out there that have gone, whoops,
I've lost some photographs.
Yep, that happens all the time, every day.
All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Backup solutions are us this evening. So whether you're backing up or syncing, if you want to hear Adam's report again, it's a 7-minute one this afternoon. It was good, or today. You can go to the website, techtalkradio.com.au, and follow the links to view from the couch off the main nav.
And all his views, from the couches are up there, aren't they?
Yeah, there's a great little site there. It actually streams them all in order for you. So if you start off with show 19 for this year, which it is today, you can actually sit there and listen to him on and on. It goes all the way down to, I think,
you can have as much Adam as you can take.
Yes. Moving right along. before we go to the Oddspot app gadget website of the week.
I mean, that was the Oddspot just then.
In this day of national broadband networks sort of coming down on us rather quickly, Internode have begun rolling out DSLs or DSLAMs in their backs in the black spots. Now, the reason why I thought I'd mention this is for no other reason. I'm hanging.
I don't know that Internode are deploying a great number of new DSLAMs, but Internode have just got access to all of IINet's DSLAMs.
Yeah, they have. They've added 242 exchanges to its DSLAM
network. Yeah, they're the IINet ones.
Oh, okay, so they're claiming a false positive here,
No, it's not a false positive. It means that Internode have some really cool features that a lot of other ISPs, in fact, I don't know any other ISP that has some of the features that Internode does.
I reluctantly had to change from Internode because they weren't available where I needed to sign up.
You can go in and you can select your profile and you can turn NXM on and off and you can do all sorts of techie stuff. It's really cool to be able to set your own profile on your ADSL service to get the best speed or the best reliability or your best ping time, whichever's most important to you.
The average consumer out there, unless they're gamers.
Oh, but our listeners are smarter than the average listener. Many of our listeners are gamers and ping time is important to them.
Correct.
So they can get this the access to these settings by having an Internode connection, and now they can have that sort of Internode connection through IINet's DSLAMs as well, because just by happy coincidence, IINet's DSLAM network uses exactly the same type of DSLAMs as Internode.
Well, they're the same box, are they?
Yeah.
That's handy, isn't it? What a coincidence.
That's fantastic.
So, anyway, there you go. Another option, another alternative if you're looking for broadband providers.
I love Internode.
Do you? Well, I'm on IINet because I couldn't get Internode.
I'm not on them at home yet because I'm having issues with migrating for complicated reasons. Which I'm
you're not with that purple mob still, are you?
Yeah, the dreadful one. Yeah. But I've been getting my customers onto Internode, and some of them are going great guns, really fantastic. Yeah,
it flies along, especially if you're relatively close to the exchange, except in Dr. Ron's case.
Grumble, grumble, grumble. Does Internode have its own network, its own backhaul, or does it rely on? Yeah, okay, good. Like IINet.
Yeah.
Not piggybacking off a big telco.
And bear in mind that the bloke who runs Internode is
Mr. Hackett,
yeah.
Yep.
Hackett and Malone are the two guys.
Hackett is a tech head. He's not a bean counter. He's a tech head. So he's obviously pretty good at counting the old beans because he's built up a wonderful company.
Mm.
But at heart, he's a tech head, so he's designed his network or ensured that his network has been designed. I'm sure he didn't do it all himself, is really properly put together. And it shows in the way it works.
All right. Police have found 15,400 Aussie credit cards on hacker forums.
Why?
Is this... I just wonder how people get credit cards, because it's a mathematical thing, isn't it, that generates them. Would they be generated by chance, or do you think they've actually been physically collected, like through a man in the middle thing these days? How would they get 15,400 cards?
You hack Sony.
Yeah, exactly.
Sony's
PlayStation network.
That's one way of doing it.
I don't think you can just randomly generate numbers. There are algorithms that you can use to verify if a number is legitimate. They have a built-in legitimacy. Yeah, way of checking that a number is legitimate. But you can't just randomly generate them. It's just people who don't have good credit card discipline. They'll leave a credit card lying around or hand it to a waiter at a restaurant, and then they think half an hour later, I wonder where my credit card is. And in the meantime, it's been sitting up on a bench next to a cash register for 20 minutes. You just need to know where your cards are at all times. Be very careful.
Yep. Mm. And the guy at the service station who gets paid some appallingly low wage that he can't live on, it's hardly surprising that some of those sorts of people are going to swipe your credit card through the FPOS machine and then under the desk where you can't see, swipe it through their card reader as well.
Do something naughty.
Yep.
Yeah.
Details of the 15,450 compromised Australian cards found by the AFP since October last year have been supplied back to the local banks.
Yeah. So obviously don't forget that the AFP aren't the only people who are watching for those lists. The bank security people are out looking for them too. And if your card shows up on one of those lists, it's a fair bet that your bank's going to be aware of it. And it happened to me once. My bank rang me up and said, look, your card number's shown up on a list of stolen cards. What we're going to do is we're going to cancel your card, go to the ATM now and take out some money so you can live for the next few days, and then we'll cancel your card in half an hour.
Mm.
And I went to the nearest ATM. I keyed in my number. I took the cash out, and as I took the cash out of the machine, my phone rang.
Yeah.
And it was the bank saying, yep, we can see you've withdrawn some cash. We've cancelled your card now.
Yeah, good. Handy.
So the bank security people can really be onto this stuff. So.
And they pick up anomalies. They have a good, and I don't know how they do it, but they know your habits. They know where you shop and what you do.
Yeah.
So if you get a transaction at a place which is unusual or in a country that's you're not in.
For example, you buy something online out of the blue.
Yeah, yeah.
And
sometimes they'll ring you up and ask you about that. Yeah. Yep. My bank knows that I do buy stuff online occasionally, so they're not surprised by that anymore. But when I went overseas, I made sure I rang my bank, or both my banks, to inform them that, yep, my credit card could be used in Noumea next week because that's where I'm going to be. So it's important to remember to do that as well. Otherwise, you might find that they'll cancel your card while you're overseas on your trip when you need it the most.
There'll be two or three transactions on it, and suddenly your card will get declined.
Large sums is always a good winner. Let the bank know if you're going to do that. I made one of my suppliers where I buy broadcast equipment from. I bought a particular videotape deck on it one day, which was sort of around the same price as a small sedan these days. And as soon as it went through the machine, I got a phone call from the bank. Are you standing in such and such? I said, oh, yeah. And anyway, but they were straight onto it.
Yeah, yeah. No, the bank security people, particularly in Australia, are particularly good. And the other thing in Australia, if your card does get used fraudulently, the bank will almost always treat that as their risk, not yours. So there's very little risk involved in using your credit card online. I mean, you've still got to protect yourself. It's still got to be common sense. But, yeah, your bank will look after you.
Fingers crossed. Oddspot, gadget, app and website coming up after this.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
The Big T announced its prices for the national broadband network.
Ah!
And that's a risk you have to be aware of and you have to be prepared to take.
So you've unnecessarily highlighted that awkward part of the conversation.
DLC stands for downloadable content.
Yeah, that's what it gives you if you've already got the toolbar.
I want a portal gun.
I want a portal gun.
Telstra need to take more safeguards so that one piece of equipment can't take down a network.
Entertaining, informative and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Cool! This thing is amazing!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Out of my hole!
Do you ever find your mobile phone failing towards the end of the day when there's not a charger or a USB cable in sight?
Not anymore.
Not anymore. Graham, this gadget won't interest you then. Andrew?
Yeah, when I have to share wireless hotspots, that tends to chew through the battery fairly quickly, yeah.
Oh, yeah, sorry about that. The Griffin USB Reserve Power Pack.
Gryffindor.
Another one of these. We've got a few of these on.
We have.
Adam had one recently.
It's a USB stick-sized portable charger. It's designed to top up your mobile device. You can use it to charge your iPod, your smartphone, your GPS, or other 1-amp USB charged devices. LEDs light up to indicate battery charge at a glance. And it works with almost any 1-amp USB device or charger, and it's designed to complement the size and shape of the Apple AC charger for iPod. It contains a 950 milliamp hour lithium-ion battery, so don't stick it in the post, and you can buy it online for $15.
Gee, that's all right.
Not too bad.
That's about $14.95 at the moment, Australian dollars.
How much capacity is it?
It's 950 milliamp hour.
That's not all that big.
Pretty, not that shabby, is it?
It's not all that big.
It'd give you a top up, though. It'd give you a bit of a boost, wouldn't it?
Like it would certainly would.
Yeah, it wouldn't fully charge a lot of devices, though.
No, it's got a little USB stick that retracts, so you can actually charge it by putting it into a USB port somewhere. That's how you juice it up. If you want more information, go to griffintechnology.com. That's our gadget, Andrew, the Griffin USB Reserve Power Pack.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio Website of the Week.
Thanks, Adam, for this week's contribution.
www.turner.
Adam Turner. Cool. .bit.com.au. It's a new business IT website containing news, reviews, and technology guides. Bit says it's a new website that aims to help the 2.7 million small businesses in Australia with technology and will feature practical, easy-to-understand advice, buying guides and tips. More importantly, Bit will help explain the big tech trends
that
might affect your business so you don't get left behind. You can browse for free, register to post comments on articles and engage in discussion and witty repartee.
Bit means Business Information Technology, B-I-T.
Again.
There you go. It's a website, Andrew, www.bit.com.au.
Tech Talk Radio, App of the Week.
This week's app, I can't believe we haven't had this before.
No, we were discussing this earlier this evening and we said, no, we must have.
We must have.
So we went back, we checked the archives, but no, we haven't.
Control F in the spreadsheet? No, it wasn't there. Instagram.
Yeah.
Instagram is a fast, beautiful and fun way, it says, to share your photos with friends and family.
Primal's been using it now. He knew what we were going to talk about. He's got a radio there that he's put into the chat
and
today's show.
And not Gareth actually tweeted us before with how he listens to Tech Talk Radio.
Maybe we should
using
do
Instagram.
That. Maybe we should have a competition. Oh, no, that could be bad.
No,
maybe
that might be bad. Forget what Andrew just said.
Forget that. That could be really bad.
The way Instagram works is it's a series of filters which can be used to transform the look and feel of your photographs. And you can then post them to Instagram, and you can have the whole tiny URL, short URL thing for posting to Facebook or Twitter or Tumblr. It's for photo sharing reinvented, it says, and it's free. There's apps for iPhone
and
Android.
Don't buy Facebook. Be careful.
Graham hates it. For more information, go to instagram.am.
Can you dig it?
No, ma'am. We're musicians.
Ma, the meatloaf!
Bong.
You can't handle the truth!
And the hits just keep on coming.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
Thank you, GD, for this Odd Spot. It's a bit of a real-world, strange Odd Spot. Attorney General Nicola Roxon will ask a Parliamentary Joint Committee on Intelligence and Security to consider reforms to Australia's intelligence agency's powers, including the ability to electronically tap video games.
Really? What does this mean?
WA Today reports that the government is pursuing a significant expansion of Australia's intelligence agency's powers, including the creation of ASIO super warrants, extending search warrants to 6 months and forcing a powerful data retention scheme on private industry. The committee is also charged with considering creating a single warrant for taps, which would apply to phones, computers, tablets, and even video games.
I thought that was a state-based thing. It's federal, is it? Or both?
Well, ASIO is a federal organisation. So where federal agencies like ASIO and the Australian Federal Police and other security intelligence organisations apply for warrants, they do it federally. Big Brother is watching you.
Data retention's a worry, isn't it?
Why?
Oh, I just think that, you know, if people keep, I guess like keeping phone records, isn't it? Data retention, they keep...
Yeah.
Anyway, that's food for another day.
We're all
going
to have to buy pile and piles of hard disks to keep this Nicola Roxon happy.
That's it.
That's
100 terabytes an hour of PlayStation scores and
cloud storage devices.
GT5
yes.
Awards.
Nicola Roxon, find something better to do.
That's our Odd Spot, Andrew.
And that's our show for this week. Thank you, Linesman. Thank you, Ball Boys. Thank you, everyone on the chat. There's a lot of people there tonight. So if you're listening to us live, you can come and say good day. If not, you know,
they're
the places.
They're all going to go away in a second.
They are. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au. Even if you've got a dumb question, we like those. Send them through. Send them through. Something that's perplexing you, there's a conundrum, whatever. Dr. Ron is here to help. That's why he's a doctor.
Bouquets, abuse, send everything. We read it all out in the correspondence.
We do. Yeah. We do. So
a lot of it we laugh at.
Yeah.
A lot of it we despair at. But,
yeah. Oh, dear.
That's okay.
Anyway, and some of the spam we just don't read. But it's very funny, so you can send some of that through too. All right. Until next week, bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, regular panellists Graham Callaghan, Mark Diggins and Lena Van Deventer. Expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by GC Support and Shaq West. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC in Melbourne. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia and around the world that broadcast the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. Contact us for the two-hour version or access the one-hour show on the Community Radio Network. Visit cbaa.org.au for further details. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03-8682-9099 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, for more information. Don't forget, you can follow the panellists on Twitter. Join us live each Monday night in the Tech Talk Radio chat and solve your issues on the Tech Talk Radio forum. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.